You're listening to Lanyap, a weekly digest of news, personal finance, brotherly banter, and whatever else is on our minds. From Stokes Family Office.
All right, Lanyap Podcast, Doug and Greg Stokes, Stokes Family Office. It is April 24th, Jazz Fest week here in New Orleans, and the weather's looking beautiful. It might warm up a bit this weekend, but for Jazz Fest, benchmarking from a weather perspective, this is about as good as it gets. A lot going on in New Orleans as well. We've got the Zurich Classic. We have Jazz Fest again next week. We're at the Pelicans in the playoffs. So a lot of action.
New Orleans is popping.
Yeah.
I saw Sunday was, this is from the TSA, Sunday was a very busy day with more than 27,600 passengers processed through the security checkpoint, just missing the busiest day ever by about 300 people. And TSA reported 34 minutes as its longest wait time in the general boarding line. So pretty crazy. New Orleans has got a lot of action right now. Things are going to start slowing down in a couple months. With summertime, but for springtime is really popping.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you look at that from an economic perspective across the country, people are traveling, people are spending, and that's really what you've seen from the perspective of market slowdown in the last few weeks. You have this expectation of interest rate cuts because of a slowing economy. That's what where we started this year. All of a sudden, you're getting higher than expected growth, higher than expected inflation, and markets are trying to figure out where we're going from here. And it's hard to imagine that there's any sort of recession on the horizon. If you just go anywhere and look at restaurants or bars, or go look at the airport when you're traveling, the anecdotes are out all over the place. And when you're in places where there's spending occurring, discretionary spending occurring, places are packed. And so we'll see that this weekend in New Orleans. It's a wonderful lineup for Jazz Fest. But if you go and look at the hotels across the city, there's basically no vacancy anywhere. Tickets are crazy expensive. And so I think this is just a microcosm of what's occurring across the country.
Yeah, and in particular, New Orleans is doing really well right now. We've got a lot of momentum with Jazz Fest, obviously, and then we've got Super Bowl coming up in 2025, which is going to be amazing. So there's a lot of good things happening in the city, and if we can avoid any sort of tropical weather this summer, I really think that's going to be a huge positive, and it's going to allow us to really fulfill that momentum that we have presently. So there's a lot of confusing things, like you mentioned, in the markets, in the economy, et cetera. And I saw this from JP Morgan Chase. This is from Bloomberg. I'm going to read verbatim. A JP Morgan Chase and company indicator is flashing a resounding buy signal in U.S. stocks after it hit a threshold that typically precedes better than average gains. And it goes on to detail that the bank's U.S. tactical positioning monitor, which measures clients' exposure to American equities, hit a level that reflects an attractive setup. And then so on. And usually after 20 days after this, the market goes up 3% versus 1% on a normal basis. But then on the same token, JP Morgan said earlier in the week, the chief market strategist of JP Morgan, Marco Kolonovic, said in a note to clients that the sell-off in stocks isn't over yet as macroeconomic risks mount, including rising bond yields and elevated oil prices. So within the same bank, you've got mixed signals, and across there's a lot of things going on in the economy as well too that are providing mixed signals. And then Morgan Stanley, their chief economist is a perma bear, so to speak. Mike Wilson, he made a big call last year that we were on the precipice of a major sell-off, and lo and behold, we had one of the best 6-month periods in the last 50 or 60 years. And now Mike Wilson, Mike Wilson's not speaking about making any sort of predictions. This is also from Bloomberg. With questions swirling around the U.S. economy and corporate earnings, Morgan Stanley's Mike Wilson is avoiding the big kind of market calls he became known for in the past couple of years to focus on finding opportunities beneath the surface. And in open quotes, you just got to keep a really flexible open mind. that's what we try to do with stock picking. So he's pivoting from making any sort of big market statements. JP Morgan's got two different signals going on.
Maybe this is a negative signal,
right? Exactly. Right. All of a sudden,
I remember I was meeting with a very large asset manager, not to be named, and they were talking about how they're trying to increase exposure to China, and I said, well, I just read an article about how you're pulling out of China and Chinese equities, and they were like, yeah, that's another side of the business. That's making that call. It's like these people are not talking to each other internally, and they have different setups across the board. But it's confusing. It basically goes to show you that you shouldn't really believe or take with a grain of salt anything that you read, because even if it's like Jamie Dimon at JP Morgan saying that there's a hurricane on the horizon and expecting recession, first of all, nobody knows the future. But second of all, he probably has 10 different opinions within the firm, just depending on who he's talking to as to the direction of the country and the economy. So anyway, there's just no use in forecasting. And so why listen to any of these people?
Yeah, 100%. One of the other sort of confusing things that's going on right now is something like 35% of S&P 500 companies are reporting the week of the 22nd, which we're in, and 28% the following week. So a huge percentage of companies reporting.
Meta or Facebook just reported and had a really poor quarter and poor guidance. And the company right now, this is 4 p.m. Central Time on the 24th, is currently down about 12% after hours. This is following a slowdown in like chip manufacturing. ASML reported last week lower than expected guidance. So that you have these headline drops like a Meta or like an ASML, but then if you look at actual earnings across the board, and this is what Yuri and Timmer came out today and said. He said after a 6% drawdown since March 28, the forward PE ratio for the S&P 500 has declined from 21.2 to 19.9. Valuations were high, so this is good to see. Price should decline less than valuations during this correction since earnings estimates are rising 12%. So despite you see these headlines of like a Meta or an ASML or NVIDIA that are guiding to lower than expected forecasts of earnings, the market in general is very healthy. Earnings estimates across the board have increased 12% so far this quarter.
Yeah, and in particular, a lot of those big names are getting hammered right now. Tesla at one point in time was the worst performing stock in the index, in the S&P 500. They had a really good day after earnings. Their earnings were reported yesterday. Today they were up like 10%. On Friday, the markets, we had a super rare day in that 300 stocks in the S&P 500 were green, and meaning positive, but the index was down almost 1%. So a lot of the really big names were sold off, even though the broad market was up. And this is from Ryan Dietrich, using data to go back to 1998. That happened only one other time in October 2nd of 2020. 300 stocks were down. We're up, but the market fell 1%. So the under the surface things are improving quite dramatically. As it relates to the Magnificent Seven, this is from Bloomberg and Deutsche Bank. NVIDIA is up like 50% on the year, but it's like 20% from its highs. This is not inclusive of today, but Meta is up like 35% and like 10% from its highs. Amazon up 10%, but 10% from its highs. So a lot of these companies in general, in this Magnificent Seven cohort, are selling off. Apple has struggled, as many people are aware, off probably about 20% from its high at this point in time. Tesla obviously has been the laggard of all of those. Microsoft's kind of flat on the year, but in general, things are improving under the surface. And as it relates to those to the non top 5 or 10 stocks, or the Magnificent Seven, or however you want to categorize it, companies that fall within the value or small cap portion of the investable universe are really trading at attractive valuations. Something like And this is a quote. This is a graphic that was produced by WisdomTree. But in general, the price earnings ratio of those anything value oriented is way below its historical median.
Yeah, this is if you look at the last week, the market sold off. The S&P was down 3.1%. The NASDAQ was down 5.5%. But the Dow was flat. And this just goes to show you what's happening under the surface. 8 of the 11 sectors in the market outperformed the S&P in general. But because the S&P is so heavily weighted towards tech, it sold off pretty decently during the week. But yeah, mid-cap, small-cap, value, all outperformed the S&P last week. And so you see this rotation going on, which I believe is very healthy, in which you don't have the top 10 stocks or top 7 stocks carrying all the market. That was the whole narrative during 2023, is the top 5 or 7 stocks returned the entire return of the S&P 500, and the bottom 495 stocks or so were flat. You're starting to see this reversal in which you get a sell-off in tech, but the rest of the market is really holding up. You had a day like Friday of last week in which the S&P 500 was down like 0.9%, but 300 to 500 stocks were green and the Dow was up 0.5%. That's something that has been almost unheard of in the last couple of years, really the last 14 months, as the tech sector has really taken off. But it's something that you want broad participation in markets. That's a healthy market. Narrow participation amongst just a few names carrying the weight of the entire market is unhealthy, because it goes to show you that there's something unsettling happening under the hood. When you have broad participation because you have improving earnings and an improving economic landscape, that's a positive. Now, you can have hiccups in the market just like we've had in the last week, but what you don't want to see is just all of the value and growth in the S&P 500 accruing just a few names. You want broad participation in markets.
100%. And what else is healthy is a pullback. I mean, we had the markets, I think, were like 6.5% from their high, and they rebounded a little bit this week. That's totally normal and expected. You get like three of those per year on average, and we haven't had one, obviously, this year up until this point in time. All that was driven on, not all of that, but a big chunk of that was driven by the conflict between Iran and Israel, and that seems to be not even in the news anymore. It seems like that Israel responded on at some time last week. I don't remember what day it was, and that sort of settled the issue, and the Iranians didn't respond and escalate or anything like that. So I think we're going back to the other narratives that are driving the market, specifically the Fed, oil yields. We're in the midst of earnings season. Obviously, that's going to drive the markets. But it's certainly healthy to have these sort of pullbacks, because the markets can't function moving an upwards to the right trajectory without any interruptions. That's what's happened really in the last 6 months. The last 6 months has been great, but it's been something that we haven't seen in the last 50 or 60 years. And it is totally normal and healthy to have these sorts of periods of time. Look, something that's not healthy as well too, and this was posted last week on April 20th. This is the 4-year anniversary of the crude price going to negative $37 a barrel. First of all, it's 4 years has gone by. That was the heart of COVID, essentially. But 4 years has gone by basically since COVID.
I can't believe it's been 4 years.
I can't believe it's been 4 years either. Doesn't seem like it was that long ago, honestly. Yeah. But I was actually talking with somebody about this the other day, about like how I have a 5-year-old now. My baby just turned 5, and she had just turned 1 during COVID. And I was talking to him about the most difficult ages for people to be during COVID. And I said that the one people in our situation with very little kids, which you were in as well too, and people also there were my other high schoolers got to be really tough.
The
too.
Worst.
Yeah,
that had to be the worst.
But
I mean, I think this crude oil chart where it went from $20 a barrel, by the way, $20 a barrel during COVID is just crazy. If you think about where oil is now, to negative $40 a barrel in a day, And then you think about like all the issues that we have today, and people are making predictions about what's going to happen with Russia and Ukraine, or what's going to happen with inflation and interest rates, or in Israel, Iran, or the election coming up, and what our market's going to do, you know, leading up to this Trump-Biden showdown. You forget how crazy things can get. And also, you should remember that we're going to be talking about something different in 3, 6, 9, 12 months. There's going to be some other crisis that concerns us. How did we emerge from a negative 300% day in oil markets? It's just, crazy things happen. Unprecedented things happen all the time. And you move on and forget about them. And it's good to have these reminders that said, shoot, we have these events that have occurred in the past, and we've risen above them and grinded through them. And why can't we just stick to a game plan when the next event occurs and try to, avoid some sort of emotional reaction to negative sentiment in markets? I think that's just a great example of a recent memory, COVID, and then this oil crash, to basically say, look, we don't know where anything's going. Stick to a game plan. Use history, long-term history, as a guide, and things are going to get a hiccup along the way, but it's not going to cause me to change anything.
Very well said. Just to put the whole oil thing in context, first of all, I wasn't even aware that oil prices could go negative. I didn't even know that was a thing where somebody, what that means functionally is that if you have oil, you have a future oil contract, whatever, you say you're buying oil, next month's oil or whatever. At one point in time, if you wanted to get rid of that contract, you'd have to pay someone $40 a barrel, which is that negative 40 indication, for them to take that oil contract off of your hands. So that's just something that just really was, I mean, you talk about unprecedented, but just not something that's almost incomprehensible. And that occurred, and there's all kinds of stuff, obviously, that occurred at that point in time in the markets that were just, it's just mind boggling. But here we are, having lived through that period, and oil prices obviously went over, got over $100 at the onset of the Ukraine-Russia crisis. But there's been a lot of things in the markets that have been kind of wacky related to the COVID period, specifically interest rates. No one would really have predicted that stocks would have recovered 6 months after the fact, or pardon me, 6 weeks after the fact. The stock market was down like 35% in 6 weeks and then recovered down 35% in a few weeks and recovered very, very quickly thereafter. Just wild times. And I really can't believe it's been like 4 years already. And my baby's 5 already. And I can see it would be a lot easier if the kids were at this age than they were dealing with a 1-year-old all day, all the time. But it was fun.
Well, anyway, coming up, we're going to have a busy week to talk about earnings next week. But in terms of going into the rest of this year, you have interest rates that have been creeping up. The 10-year treasury is now close to 4.7%. Correlations between stocks and bonds still remain quite high. So as bonds go up in value, stocks have gone up in value, and vice versa. That really hasn't changed much, although I've predicted that it would. And there's actually a really great article in Morningstar this week talking about the difference between interest rate regimes and that correlation. And basically, the summary is that when you have high inflation and high expectation of rates, you have high correlation between stocks and bonds. And really, in periods of high interest rates, you would expect lower returns in stocks. So the high interest rates actually end up being a benefit on the bond side of the portfolio. You get more volatility, but you get return from bonds. The period of 2010 to 2020, you basically had no return in bonds, but stocks were buoyed by that low interest rate environment and by recovery from the 2008-2009 financial crisis, that the bond return and that negative correlation with stocks didn't really matter because you had such good return in stocks. It'd be interesting as we go into the back half of this year with interest rates expected to at least have one or two cuts, whether that that changes right now. Everything is still very correlated as stocks have gone down for the month of April. Bonds have gone down as well. What are your thoughts around that?
I mean, if I knew the answer to that, I think there's obviously so much uncertainty. I tend to think that rates are going to go down at some point in time. The Fed's at least indicating that, but they've been pushing back the goalposts, so to speak. I mean, at the beginning of or at the end of last year, the prognosticators were saying that there was going to be something like 6 rate cuts this year, and now that we might only get one or none potentially. And there's some people that are saying that we may get a rate hike. It's been really, really fascinating. And if you would have asked me, just like during COVID, like if what would happen, would there ever be oil prices that would go negative, I would say that sounds crazy. And then lo and behold, it happened. But then if you would have asked me another question, what would the stock market do if you had 6 or the fastest increase in interest rates in history, going from 0% to 5.5% where they are in 13 months? Do you think that would cause a recession? And I would say, yeah, that probably would cause a recession just because that just would slow down economic activity tremendously. But here we are in a situation where the economy seemingly is booming. Obviously, there's some areas of the economy that are suffering, i.e. real estate and anyone that's exposed to short-term interest rates. But no one really would have thought that there, I guess some people might have called it, but the idea of people having fixed debt, companies having fixed debt, and in terms of people, in terms of mortgages, and companies in terms of bonds, and that really keeping their household balance sheet tight, and then employers not wanting to get rid of employees because of the aftermath of COVID. So there's
strong,
all these
strong bank balance sheets to withstand a major decline in real estate valuations. There's just a lot of things that happened positively that got us to this point. And you can actually see the end of this very precarious situation that we've been on and see the positive result that nobody really expected. I think, you had the 10-year treasury or the treasury curve invert in 2022, still inverted to this day. That was the first call for recession. You had the real estate crisis that led to Silicon Valley Bank issues and them buying bonds and having a run on bank after that. Bonds at 1%, that their bonds were down to 60 cents on the dollar, and then potential runs on banks. We withstood that potential issue. You had higher for longer interest rates and the expectation that we wouldn't be able to withstand 5% rates for very long. Rates have continued to stay at elevated levels and getting pushed out further, and the market is acting resiliently. And I think it all comes down to a very strong consumer that is under-levered, that leverage that did have that was on balance sheet for these consumers was fixed at a very low rate of return. You had companies that were in really strong financial positions, and all of that was a general positive. Now we're on the 5-yard line here with this hiking cycle and potential go back to a cutting cycle. So things can happen, but a lot of things had to go right. And for the people that were prognosticating a recession, they had very good points at the time, but the problem is if you make broad decisions in your portfolio based upon predictions, then you're wrong, then you've got some problems.
Right. Especially when you're talking about operating in such an uncertain world. I mean, we're coming off of you apply general rules of thumb, like inverted yield curve or what have you, but you're talking about a situation where, or the Fed, you don't fight the Fed or whatever.
Oil got to $120 a barrel with the invasion of Ukraine. I mean, that was the other major issue that happened right in the middle of all this. You had inflation that hit 9%. It's hard to remember all these things. There were such negatives that you're like, oh, of course we're going into a recession. But you had the 2 quarters of negative GDP, which was it a recession? Was it not a recession? There's debate around that. I think clearly in hindsight, it wasn't, because it re-accelerated very quickly. after that. But it was a period where you could have a number of times said, look, let's, I can see we're on the precipice here of disaster. Let's pull back. And that would have just been the wrong call. And I think every time throughout history that an event like this has occurred where there's an expectation of slowdown, you know, you have these major events like 2008 or, you know, March of 2020 or, you know, the 1973, 74, or 2000, you can point to these periods of time where, yeah, it probably would have been a good idea to sell equities and buy bonds and, you know, wait for some sort of drawdown to occur. But for every one of those, there's 20 crises that don't materialize, and you're better off just holding a diversified portfolio. Anyway, this is we're getting up to 25 minutes now, and I think this is just a good reminder that well, first of all, we don't know where anything's going now, but things are looking good from an economic perspective. We'll be back next week, and we'll recap our first weekend of Jazz Fest, and we hope everyone has a wonderful time. If you're in New Orleans, enjoy the great weekend and enjoy the festivities. And if you're elsewhere, we hope you have a great rest of your week. This is Doug and Greg Stokes with Lanyap Podcast, and give us 5 stars and tell your friends about us.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Lanyap. This podcast is brought to you by Stokes Family Office. If you liked this episode, consider sharing it with a friend. You can subscribe to future episodes in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information about Stokes Family Office and Lanyap, visit us at stokesfamilyoffice.com. The information in this podcast is educational and general in nature and does not take into consideration the listener's personal circumstances. Therefore, it is not intended to be a substitute for specific, individualized financial, legal, or tax advice. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a final decision.